have up my ears.
There you go.
I do have my microphone this time.
Yes, you do. You started right off with it. Nice job.
I can't.
Ooh, little feedback there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Huh. That was interesting.
I didn't hear it.
Evidently not.
What did it sound like, Mark?
It sounded like feedback. It sounded like zzzz.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Good job.
Hey, I try.
I assume I didn't hear it, so maybe that was a bad representation.
Well, you know, when you hear it, you'll be able to hear it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well said.
When you listen.
When you listen, you'll be able to hear it.
Well, yeah.
I'm listening now, and I don't hear it.
There you go. Well, it's not there. I would know.
Yes, you would. You would. All right. I think I'm...
You all adjusted? Adjusted Justin.
Justin needs to adjust.
Yeah.
Just in time.
Yeah. Welcome to How I See It with me, Mark Pratt, and...
Justin Sternberg. This is a podcast that works to counter cultural polarization through thoughtful conversations.
You know, I was disappointed we didn't catch a little more of what we recorded after the session last time. I think we had some of our... You're adjusting me now. I thought I was supposed to be kind of at an angle thing.
Yeah, it was just...
It's my beard is shorter, Justin, so it makes the microphone look like it's in the wrong spot.
If it's angled but past your mouth, it's not good. It needs to be angled towards...
I hear you. I hear you.
All right, what were we talking about that we wish we were recording?
Yeah, I wish
Should
we
re- I think, reproduced.
I think the post-recording conversation was in some ways just as good as the actual podcast.
What was it about?
Well, when we were talking about colleges versus trades, and like I say, I didn't want to come across as far as being dogmatic in either direction, but yeah, I think I just enjoyed the discussion afterwards and had more opportunity to think about it a little bit.
Yeah.
So yeah,
because I think it was just we were talking a little more personal about, right?
Yeah,
about
that's what it was as far as what your experience a little more
and yours
and just having the ability to plan for our kids for the future, and it was just it was a good conversation as far as being able to think about how we plan.
Yeah.
For our kids' future, that kind of thing, recognizing, it's going to be an expense, but yet what's the hurry in some ways? And, is there a hurry? And it was just some neat life experience stuff. So appreciate you sharing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you all missed out. So.
But like you say, that's not to say we can't revisit the topic in a way that,
Yeah, that would be good. Yeah, it'd be cool to potentially get someone who's kind of finance oriented to talk about practical ways to do that or, you know.
And but just ways to use.
Even Chris.
Like, even use your, retirement accounts, like IRAs and stuff like that, Roth IRAs, those you can use for education, if you want to, that kind of thing. So, just being it was good to be able to think about ways to make college less expensive too.
Yeah.
For other people, for our children and that kind of thing, and recognizing that hard work does pay off, and scholarships and what have you there. That was something we didn't necessarily address, but I guess we're addressing it now a little bit. But either way,
we're teasing it anyway.
Yeah. So as you think about, our culture and what has become, I was thinking of course about the education, and I tend to think about, what are, I'll say universities in some ways, our educational system, higher educational system tends to promote. If you were to just kind of put that in if you were to stereotype, the process of higher education, what comes to mind for you? And I'm asking you, because like you say, I give you credit for being far more.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out what the question means.
I'm just thinking.
Can you rephrase it?
Yeah, when you think about higher education, okay, what terminologies come to mind when you think about that? As far as, I mean, do you think about education? Do you think about sports? Do you think about, in other words, you know, a lot of people have college teams they support, you know, or they, you know.
A lot of things come to mind, honestly.
Okay.
Because
give me the top five.
Okay.
If there's a lot of things.
Elitism.
Oh, okay.
That came to my mind.
Okay.
Party schools.
Okay.
That came to mind.
Sure.
I don't know if I have a single word for this, but basically like think tank.
Okay.
Kind of idea, like a lot of good
brainstorming,
a lot of good thoughts, a lot of good research, you know?
Sure.
You
know, like, yeah.
Cause there's negative and positive things.
Agreed.
That my mind kind of comes up.
And maybe stereotype was the wrong word for me to use, but just kind of, you know, what you think of in general.
And I think kind of, a little bit of the Chesterton fence thing where there's a lot of structure that feels unnecessary, but also it's been that way for so long and like so long to the point where, you know, founding fathers type, you know, close to that far back the way things are. So then it's like, I don't know, just a lot of rigidity and structure around the whole app, you know, application process and how you get in, what you have to do.
Sure.
And
the process.
Yeah. And I think we talked a little bit about how it in other conversations, not just the one about college, but education, about how education doesn't always look like SATs and, you know, getting good SAT scores. I don't know.
Yeah. I think about it in some of the context of, I think, I'm thinking about it in the, as far as there's a lot of quotes that are coming to mind, but I can't pull them up as far as, you know, but that ability to say, you know, whoever controls the education kind of controls the future type thing, because, you know, in that dynamic, you know, you take a kid and you expose them to a certain level of anything, that's going to affect the way they think. And I think, you know, higher education tends to continue to promote that. And, you know, I'm just thinking about it from different cultural things. I think about it even from, you know, when we were seeing Black Lives Matter, you know, how many individuals happen to be kind of young white kids, you know, in that process. And I think, you know, that comes, a lot of that comes from a, what I would call a higher educational perspective, to be able to recognize, okay, how are people being misused or not, you know, that kind of thing is what comes to mind from that aspect. As I look back and I, you know, think about what was going on and who was primarily involved, you know, that's one of those things that come to mind for me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I guess that kind of ties into a thought I had too, is kind of left wing liberal kind of ideology. I think a lot of times is, you know, very much that's the education, you know, higher ed side of things.
I hear you.
And as we've talked about before, well, I don't necessarily think that's bad. I don't necessarily think, yeah, we've talked about this before, but like some ideologies and things, I think left wing or right wing, I feel, are, you know, loving and compassionate or whatever.
Sure. Yeah. That's what I was thinking, you know, as far as not wanting anyone to, you know, not have the same opportunities as other people. You know, that kind of thing. I think, you know, that aspect of, you know, equality, if you will, that there, you know, should be an equality that is across the board, male, female, you know, race, whole nine things, you know, whole nine yards, everything should be equal. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, and I like that word of you use as far as ideology, you know, because I think it is an ideology to the point that, you know, everything can be equal or, you know, it's not equal and it's not equal because of a certain reason, you know, when that may not necessarily be the case, you know, and we can look at things from different perspectives that, you know, maybe more elitist, as you use the word, or it may be more victimized, you know, depending on which end of the spectrum you follow there. But as I was thinking about that further, you know, it's like the aspect of cancer. Yeah. Cancel. Easy for me to say, not cancer culture. Although that doesn't do
that's its own.
That seems like it's in its own increase. But like you say, cancel culture from that aspect. What comes to mind for you when I say that word from a...
Yeah. Know? Well, what's funny is what comes to mind to me isn't necessarily college. But
I understand. But it was the best I could do to make the transition.
I know. That was good. Nice try. Yeah. I'm just saying, yeah, again, for me, that's... so, yeah, cancel...
Yeah, now you're going to have a tough time saying it. That's okay, too.
Cancel culture. I feel like the kind of the wording is pretty new, but the idea of it is pretty old.
Hmm.
In the sense that one of the weapons that we can use in culture is to say that side is bad, this side is good. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And paint the picture of that side being so bad that you try and get as many people to run over to your side as possible. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And when I think of that, I think of politics in particular, and you know, the ads for politicians and how they're so yeesh, you know.
I hear you. Yeah.
And that precedes kind of this whole idea of cancel culture, I think. Mm. You know, I think that's been going a lot longer than quote unquote cancel culture. But yeah, one of the unique new things, I mean nothing's new under the sun, right? But yeah. Kind of this new round of cancel culture is about you know, we dug up a skeleton and therefore we know you're human with skeletons and therefore you're not fit for whatever the thing is you're doing, or you know what I mean?
And, no, I don't know what you mean, but I'm with you.
I mean, it's this idea that we found something out about you.
Oh, okay. And when you're saying a skeleton,
yeah, I gotcha. We found something out about you in your past that disqualifies you from your current situation.
Okay.
And there's many situations that, you know, I'm on board with the cancel.
Okay.
Right.
I see what you're saying.
Epstein is a good example.
Okay.
You know,
like a Supreme Court nomination, depending on when something happened or to, you know,
it depends. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
So for me, so this is the crux of the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Is that it depends. Right.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of this flavor of cancel culture is less it depends and just nope, if that's a thing then you're out, you know.
Sure. In other words, it doesn't necessarily factor in a normalized human condition.
Right. And not only that, but the ability to change.
Sure.
And did true change happen? And you know, your preamble this time is before we started recording, you were asking about boycotting versus cancel culture. Like,
sure.
You mentioned that word.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I led you right down the wrong trail, didn't I?
I'm still trying to get back to the good one you started on before we were recording, but where my brain was worrying and then it just shut down. It was like a wrench in the system.
Sorry about that.
It's all right. That's more on my own tiredness than on your... Anyway, the boycotting, I kind of think, like, again, that's been that term to me and the usage of it has been around longer than cancel culture. And when I think of boycotting, I think right wing. When I think of cancel culture, I think left wing. I think liberal. I think, you know, and I think boycott, conservative, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they're just kind of the same ideas-ish, maybe not. Actually, let's break that down. I don't think they're necessarily the same idea, though they could
end
up being that way in someone's mind. Yeah. But like the idea, again, this is how I see it, but how I see boycotting is this idea of this company stands for something we don't agree with, therefore we need to stop supporting them. So that's that's a pretty base definition, and I think most would agree with that. However, I think some people who jump on the boycotting bandwagon are more in a cancel culture mindset.
Sure.
Of that's right, that, you know, shut them off, you know?
Yeah. And I think at times, you know, even I think there's a realistic aspect to even the kind of, there's a phrase, voting with your dollar.
Yep.
You know, that aspect of, you know, where we do put our resources or what we do fund makes a difference.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying that has to be a part of cancel culture, you know, but at the same time when I'm aware of my individual decisions, and, you know, I would even bring it back to maybe, you know, where my investments go or who I, you know, not necessarily, you know, not that the stock market's all bad or anything, that kind of thing, but being mindful of where my resources are going and what I'm supporting with that.
Yeah.
I think that is for me, it's a more palatable version of, you know, it may be a dynamic of the cancel culture, you know, in that process but I think it's healthier than just you're this, so therefore,
yeah.
But
yeah,
I think
I agree. But I also
go ahead.
You and I both lean definitely conservative, even if I lean.
Sure.
I try and lean away from that leaning. Yeah. I'm still conservative.
You know? I hear you.
And so are you.
Well, that's why I ask you, because you're less conservative leaning.
That's right.
Or more open-minded in some ways.
Well, I don't think that's true. I think that's why we enjoy these conversations.
More aware.
Because, yeah. Okay, gotcha. I gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe more in tune with culture.
Yeah, I give you credit for being more culturally aware.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although, I mean, you definitely get your own share of awareness through counseling and through, you know, some of the paradigms you
but
we make a good team is what I'm trying to say, Mark. You're okay.
Nice job.
I won't cancel you today, Mark. Or boycott you.
Yeah, you know, and that's, I guess in some ways that's the reality of what we do here. If you don't like what we do, you don't have to.
You can cancel. Please don't. We need your donor dollars. I'm just kidding.
And at the same time, that's a choice. And if you want to take, and I think that's a part of the difference, if you want to take other people with you because of something we said, you get that option.
Yeah.
Don't listen to those guys anymore.
Okay.
They're too whatever, you know, conservative, too liberal. I doubt we'll get called that. I really do. But at the same time, you know, that is a perspective dynamic. Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking about it, you know, in that process of a healthy way, you know, to deal with that cancel.
Yeah.
There you go. Culture. Cancel.
So again, there is, so there's particular movements that kind of come to mind.
Yeah.
One is the Me Too movement.
Okay. Sure.
I kept wanting to say she said.
Okay.
And I was like, that's not, that's not it. Me Too movement, which if you're not familiar, I'll explain to you as you crawl out from under your rock. But basically it's this idea that women started coming out saying, you know, I was, you know, sexually abused or sexually even, I don't know.
Sure.
What are the terms that aren't quite abused, but. Yeah. Harassed, you know, yes, the kind of harassment. Or, you know, someone in influence used, you know, my sexuality against me in some form or another, whether it was to prevent me from getting, you know, and through that whole process, I personally was very thankful for that, because I think there is a lot of that happening, or was happening. I'm sure still happening. I don't I don't think that's ever going to go away. But there's dynamics too. And we've talked about masculinity, toxic masculinity. We've talked about gender. We've talked about a lot of these things. And we've talked about a little bit about the patriarchy and the idea behind that. And a lot of those things aren't going away, maybe ever. And so, and men, and by men, I mean mankind, men and women, but we're evil at our heart. And that's something we believe theologically as believers, is that by nature, our bent is towards evil and more accurately towards our own flesh. So, you know, feeding my own desires and my own, and me above all others, right? And so as a result, there's going to be situations where men, specifically the gender men, will use the fact that they're a man and they have particular influence in their situation to get what they want, which is sex, which is influence, which is affection power from women, whatever. What were you going to say?
Power.
Yep. And as a result, women will be abused through that one way or another. I think, and so I guess all that to say, I'm thankful to have some light shed, some accountability brought, brought to bear, in the sense that, you know, there was a minute there where I think every man in show business, especially, was afraid of, like, well, crap, are they going to talk about this thing? Well, maybe they should. You know, it's like, it was kind of my mindset, like. But at the same time, obviously, there's a fine line between that and grace and someone, you know, changing and having done the wrong things in their past. Heck, I've done lots of wrong things in my past that I, you know, we talk about at Celebrate Recovery and talk about, you know, it's a big part of what we do at CR is talk about the junk in our drawer from the, you know, our past skeletons. Situations, our skeletons, in order to provide some light for those still dealing with that thing in a path forward, and also to try and keep us out of that, right? Away from those things. So cancel culture is just this idea that, well, you did a bad thing once, and therefore you're that person, and that person can't be allowed to be doing the thing that that person's doing, which, you know, whether it's politics or showbiz or whatever. And again, in some cases, I think that's true. You are that person, and you shouldn't be allowed to be doing what you're doing, because there's no, since that thing was found, there's nothing in their life that you can point to that says, you're not someone different, right?
Yeah.
And I can definitely think of different individuals that have been kind of accused in that whole thing that I'm like, probably a good thing they're canceled. You know, I can't see any reason, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And I'm not. And I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it, because in some ways I'm not always sure that in the cancel culture dynamic, it's as cut and dry as what you're describing, you know, that somebody did something wrong. Therefore, and I think at times it can just be somebody said something, you know, that was conservative, or somebody said something that was liberal. And therefore now we, you know, and at times I'm not even always sure that people have a full understanding of the context.
I guess. Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
I guess I think from my perspective, I was coming at it from the historical part of how we got here.
Okay.
And I feel like, okay, so now that thing happened.
Yep.
You know,
Me Too movement. I got you. Yep.
Maybe a listener has ideas of other things preceded that kind of even set the stage for Me Too. Mm. But for me, that seemed like a watershed moment in terms of cancel culture. Okay. Mm. And again, I look at that thing and I think mostly good outcome. Like mostly I'm thankful for the cancels that happened in that culture.
Sure.
Right. So, but I think it set a precedence for, hey, this thing works. Right. Yeah. Like, and then, you know, obviously there's been concerns, which I don't feel too bad about this, but like, well, I'm a man, I'm an actor, and maybe I did something in my past, but I'm not like that anymore. And am I going to lose my livelihood?
Sure.
You know, and that part of me just wants to go boo-hoo, but then there's a part of me that goes, yeah, that's, I understand. Like, we want grace. We need grace, you know, and maybe that person is legitimately trying to be a different person, you know, and I support that in every way, you know, and that maybe to an extreme compared to most people. And that's as a result of hearing 800 testimonies, right, over the last 14 years of doing Celebrate Recovery and going, holy crap, that person can change, you know, anyway. So, yeah, I agree with you. It's gotten to, I think, in some ways, an extreme place where you can point at one single sentence and say, that's who that person is, therefore cancel.
I gotcha.
Right?
Yeah.
To bring it back around to it.
And when would you say I'm honestly think about it from the aspect of, you know, Me Too movement, that kind of thing. What era would you put that in as far as that goes?
What do you mean by
era? In other words, 90s, 80s.
Oh, Me Too? No, yeah. 2010s.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I'm just thinking about it even as you think of different, you know, and I do think about it even from the university standpoint of I think of, and I, even the Olympics, you know, when I'm thinking about these doctors,
Nasser. Yeah.
I was thinking about the coach from Penn State, you know, who had, you know, cause those things. And there again, I think, you know, some of that might've preceded that.
Yeah.
Me too. As you brought up the point, I was just thinking about I can't think of the coach from, but yeah.
So Tarana Burke, never heard that name.
Okay.
Have you?
No.
Is an American activist and business executive. In 2006, she founded the Me Too movement, which sought to assist survivors of sexual violence, especially women of color.
Hmm.
So I guess 2006 would have been the kind of starting point.
Sure.
I never heard any of that, but yeah, so yeah, it makes sense that it's kind of ramped up. Yeah, you were close with 2010.
Yeah. But I guess maybe I'm older than I think I am, but it seems like some of those other dynamics even, you know.
Yeah, like the Olympics. I think that was all.
Was that all about the same time?
I mean, let me look at Nasser Olympics.
And was it Sandusky was the coach from Penn State?
Hmm.
There again, those are the things that are kind of coming to mind as we, you know, have this topic. And by all means, I think there's something to be said for, you know, people of power, you know, taking advantage of people, you know, who don't have the same power or using their power in such a way that is, you know, manipulative or, you know, what'd you find there?
Accusations from the 90s to 2018, but June 17, 2015 is when, according to court filings and interviews, Maggie Nichols and her coach, Sarah Jancy, reported Nasser to USA Gymnastics officials on June
17,
2015.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that was 2015.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And Sandusky.
Yeah, like I say, I might be really pulling back. It was under Paterno. I know Joe Paterno was head coach, and I thought, yeah, can remember who was underneath him. Might not even show up. I might have a wrong person.
He was arrested at his residence on December 7, 2011.
Okay. So, yeah.
What was the other one?
No, was that Sandusky?
Yeah.
Okay. No, that was, that's the same.
So 2006 kind of started ramping this up.
Yeah.
Which Sandusky, I mean, that was boys. Yep. So I don't know if it fell in the Me Too, but yeah, definitely the idea of.
I do think there again. Up. Yeah. And someone in power who, you know, basically assaulted a number of individuals, you know, and Me Too. It kind of comes to mind, and I, you know, fully agree that, you know, a lot of that circumstance, it's not just about other people jumping on the bandwagon.
Right.
I believe,
right.
You know, that had been going on for a long time.
Yep.
And go ahead.
Sorry.
But as people, I think there is I would be the first to admit, and I think I've even had, you know, these conversations with, you know, like Lizzie, it's to the point of recognizing that if I'm, it almost went to a point of feminism at times, because it's like, even now, you know, it's like sometimes when I open the door for somebody, it's not that I don't think you can open the door for yourself, you know, that kind of thing. But I think it's changed an awareness that we have. That's like, you know, am I offending you by doing so? You know what I mean? It's you, if I may, your stick analogy.
Yeah.
You know, it's gone from
it's working.
It's gone from, you know, one part to another as far as, yeah, what was just a chivalrous, if I may say so, you know, dynamic has become something that is, you know, rude.
Yeah. I think one of the aspects of culture we can count on, like the ticking of a clock, is the pendulum swinging, right?
Oh, sure.
You think of a grandfather clock and how the pendulum swings back and forth. And like, that's absolutely part of how culture works. And I definitely see this whole cancel culture, Me Too, all of that, the pendulum swinging back from the direction it was.
Okay.
And probably, I think, reaching a point where it's going to start swinging back, or is already. Okay. That's my perspective on it. Because there's a reason it got so bad and this became such a big thing. It's because the pendulum had been on that other end for so long that there was no longer even that much effort to be secret about these things.
Sure.
And that could only last so long. And all of a sudden, it's like, well, you saw that. Yeah, that's a real thing. And then, okay, well, let's deal with it. And then we did. And it's like, well, they dealt with it. Why can't, and, you know, and it's like, boom, 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 the dominoes started falling.
Gotcha.
And now they're, you know, it's like the dominoes are just knocking down everywhere. And it's like, even good dominoes, you know, like whatever. And I feel like, again, my perspective, and we can, let's listen back in 20 years and see, you know, whatever. But I feel like we're reaching a point where it's going to start swinging back, because now, you know, chaos, dominoes everywhere. And we can't, we don't even know anymore which dominoes are good or which ones are bad. And so now it's time to start rebuilding that domino train, right?
Like, sure.
And I think there'll be kind of a shift into like, all right.
Sure.
And I feel like that's already happening. I think there's so many different things that have kind of latched onto this cancel culture idea that it's gotten to the point where it's like, all right, we're doing that again. Let's just wait it out and see how legit this really is.
Okay.
I feel like that's where we're at already.
In other words, there's a waiting process that wasn't necessarily let's see where the facts go or what bubbles to the surface before we start to jump to a conclusion. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. Where now I think boy cried wolf enough times by this point that the pendulum's starting to swing back. That's my perspective on it, to where it's like, well, let's just see how it works out in court, and let's see, you know.
Yeah.
And so I also want to say the fact that a few innocents probably got hit in this whole Me Too thing, that's a bummer. The fact that so many got caught, right, is, I don't want to even say that's worth it. That's terrible. That's not what I mean. But I'm just really thankful that the pendulum swung this way, because
it needed to swing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as everybody should, I have a particular distaste for sexual abuse. And, you know, I have, you know, reasons because of, you know, my family and stuff like that, that I just, to me, that's a very angering thing when I hear about that, you know. So I'm really thankful to hear people got what they had, you know what I mean? And if someone got canceled because they did that in the past, and maybe they're changed now, I don't feel too bad about it, partly because I don't know that person, and I don't, you know, like, I think it might be different if I was doing accountability with them, and I'm like, well, you don't understand, this person's really actually working to be a different person, you know, that's a whole different thing. And
but, well, it's like any law or anything that's personal, once it becomes, once it affects me, you know, and I'm a different person, or it affects me, and I can't deny this anymore.
Yeah.
You know, then it takes on a personal dynamic. And if I may, that pendulum swing, I like the pendulum swing. What would you say is underneath that? In other words, what creates, I know you mentioned the lady in 2006. Do you think that's really what it comes down to, is one person create?
No, I don't.
Therefore I would be curious what you see is the underlying factor. And granted, you know, the mind can go to the spiritual realm and that kind of thing. And yet I'm still thinking about it. Is there very much a cultural dynamic that comes into play that tends to regulate which direction that pendulum shifts as you see it?
Yeah. I mean, I don't even think it's that deep or complicated. I just think it's the nature of the pendulum to where, like I was saying, where it's swinging so far this way, the momentum can no longer take it that way. It has to do what gravity does and swing back. And that's what I was trying to talk about, the scenario where we're no longer even doing this in secret. We're so confident of,
I gotcha,
no one's going to call me out on this. I have so much power. I can just,
elitist.
Yeah, sure. I think it's more,
I'm above the process.
I think it's the process is for people like us.
I gotcha.
So I can do this because I'm in the specific vein of who this works for.
Sure. Know? Okay.
And again, I think the pendulum swings so far that so long that it eventually it just cannot be supported that way anymore. It's like now you're just raping people in your office in front of your whole office.
Sure.
And there's photographic evidence and there's 18 witnesses and you know what I mean? And then not only are you doing that, like I said, it comes out, it's publicized, people start finding out, and then you're like, that just happened in my office. Maybe I should talk about it, right? And so you get what I'm saying about the natural pendulum of like, you reach a point where it cannot go any further and start swinging back the other direction.
Sure.
So I don't think it's, my perspective is I don't think there's, you know, you can point to that lady or you can point to specific events, but I always feel like that's not the trigger. That's the thing that points to the pendulum swinging back.
I hear you.
The natural course correction that happens culturally. And I believe, you know, again, spiritually, that this is, you know, God's way of handling things, you know what I mean? And which, yeah, would probably, if we go that direction, we could never come back.
But, I hear you. No doubt.
There's a lot to be said about that. But
yeah.
But yeah, I don't think it's that complex. I don't think there's
I hear where you're coming
underground
from. Yeah, yeah.
Things that are manipulating. I think it's the natural course.
Yeah.
But I do think people take credit for those swings. Or like,
I got you.
We'll give credit, right?
Sure.
Like, look at that person. They changed the course of whatever. It's like, yes, they were part of that pendulum swinging back.
Sure.
You know, and
so even people like Martin Luther King or somebody like that, you would say that pendulum, I'm not undermining him, but you would say it just got to a point where people said, no, this isn't right. And he happened to be a spokesperson for that pendulum swing.
Yeah, I never thought about that, but I think you could totally go that, right? Like, I think you could make a case for the way the church had gone and like how extreme it had reached a point where, okay, something's going to start tipping.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
So, yeah.
I hear you.
Yeah. Yes.
I gotcha.
Yeah. And I would argue too, like, just think about, you think about Cirque du Soleil, right? You ever heard of that?
I've
you know, it's like these crazy circus performers.
Yeah. That's like a version of escapades or something like that. Not that.
Yeah. But not on ice. But yeah. Gymnastics.
Yeah.
But what they do is, I mean, world defined. Like, it's insane. Sure. Like, the level, it's way beyond escapades, in my opinion.
Yeah. I agree.
You know, what they're pulling off. And
yeah. It's a show.
Like, it's otherworldly what they're able to do.
Like, I gotcha.
But so much of what they're doing depends on momentum.
Okay.
Right?
Sure.
So the feats that they're accomplishing seem physics defying, but it's not. It's physics.
Sure.
Right? It's the natural swing of motion can cause that much dynamic, you know, thing. Or enough people jump on a trampoline at the same time creates this,
you know? Yeah.
And that person's 200 feet in the air. I mean, it's ridiculous, exactly. But it's like, it doesn't seem like that's possible for those four people to go boink like that. And this person to be, you
know, catapulted that far.
And so you look at that person, you think that person is not human, right? Like they have something that none of us do, which is still true. I'm not taking away from their abilities. Yep. They are ridiculous in their athleticism and they're doing things that do get them killed.
Sure.
Right? Like it's intense things they're doing. Like, but the point is it's math, you know?
Sure.
And I feel like that's very similar to something like Martin Luther King Jr.
Sure.
Right. Either one of those where there's nothing to take away from what they did, but you also have to recognize the power of momentum.
Sure.
Right. And the physics that are in play and the pendulum that's happening. And if you catch that pendulum at the right time and you are properly prepared for that moment, you know, you could be the one that's the spokesperson for this swing back the other direction.
Sure.
And I think that's recognizing that and seeing that that's true is important for every believer in what we've talked about in purpose, you know, that I might not be that one, but I need to be prepared for that opportunity. I need to be doing what I need to be doing on a daily basis that I don't miss that opportunity if I'm called to it, or I recognize that maybe that I'm not that person, but my purpose is no different, is no less.
Sure.
You know,
I don't have to be that person, but yet I can be preparing.
In
such a way that says, if I become that person, so be it.
Yeah. And I guess what I'm saying is I think those people do take special some things. I'm not taking away from them. So, you know, if you might be doing work right now that doesn't seem to have, but you have a special purpose and you're doing outlier work, right?
Sure.
You're doing something beyond what most of us do. There might be a reason for that as part of, you know, catching the next wave of history.
No doubt.
Which waves is another good analogy, you know.
Sure. They come
ebb and flow and
No, I appreciate you sharing on that pendulum. That's a and that ability. And it, so as you I'm curious, okay, in the, as I think about the pendulum, as I kind of think about the cancel culture, man, I have a tough time with that. Do you see that everything, and I use that word, you know, everything flows back and forth, or is there a general movement in some ways that over time the clock moves? You follow me?
Yeah, I do. Yep. So again, that kind of comes back for me to a theological question, which is, how long is eternity? Well, it's a pretty darn long time.
Sure.
So if you take that into perspective, I do think, yeah, it's all a pendulum. Like, and the whole story arc of the Bible is, I think you can see the pendulums there of like, you know, it started out perfect. It swung towards evil. You know, God brought Jesus into the picture, started swinging back. And now you see that pendulum of end of the Bible and Revelation, and he's going to make it right and swing it back.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I hear you. And that's where I'm at. I think there's a, we can be aware of the micro pendulums, but I do believe, like you're saying, biblically, there is the macro where God definitely steps in and sets things correct. You know, it's like, it's, for lack of better terminology, it's like daylight savings time. Boom.
Yeah.
It happens this time, you know, and that's God's way of making it light again. You know, I just, poor analogy, apologize, but you know, it's not that the clock has moved. It's this process of God has basically said, okay, this is too far. And we can, like you're saying with Noah or, you know, with Jesus, you know, his, you know, there was this time where there was appointed time and there was an appointed person.
Yeah. And you could see the pendulum literally stop at that person.
Sure.
To go the other, you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, yeah. It's interesting to think about all the, you know, all the different people when you think about scripture, you know, how God used them in such a way to reset a moment. You know, in history, you know, that Mm-hmm. And it kind of brings back to, you know, when you were talking about every, you know, our hearts being evil and that kind of thing. You know, you think about the Jobs and, you know, and the Daniels that were given the opportunity, you know, labeled righteous, you know, in that process, or, you know, man after God's own heart type thing. Not that they didn't have their errors, you know, I was thinking more of David, but yet, you know, it's interesting to see how God was able to move in people's lives. And even from a cancel culture perspective, you know, being able to recognize, they had their own histories, you know, and I think, you know, even Paul talks about that, you know, how the things that he had done, you know, with zeal, he's like, I was clueless about that. If you thought you were this and I was that much more, you know, that kind of thing. But yet, I was just still bringing it back to that aspect of he wasn't excluded by God. In other words, God doesn't cancel, you know, us based on our past. If anything, he uses those skeletons.
That's right.
In such a way that has influence and helps other people in that process.
Yeah, I think you saying that definitely hits on this kind of deeper thought that I've had, not deeper, but like kind of this underlying thought, which I've had, which is anytime someone's skeletons are brought out to me is an opportunity, like it's a good thing.
Sure. No doubt.
And this comes from, you know, a perspective of change in my own life and again, being involved in a recovery ministry. And anytime those skeletons are brought to light, that brings us the opportunity to then deal with them.
Sure.
Or, you know, you can hire a bunch of lawyers to try and stuff it and hide it and, you know, like pay off the whatever, which certainly was a thing and is a thing that, that has happened. And so even if someone's skeletons are brought out and you feel like, but they're not that person anymore. Again, it's an opportunity.
Sure.
To address, to deal with, to admit to, and I want to see my leaders who get canceled, right, because of their things, and they go, well, darn, I was hoping that would never get out, but here we are,
sure,
you know, and work through it. And that's the kind of leader I want to trust and respect with leading the things that I'm, you know, my country, my state, my whatever, is the ones that can, because we all have skeletons. There's none of us that nobody has clean closets, right? Like there's stuff you have that you would rather not the public know about.
Yeah.
So if you can have those things brought out and then work through them, like to me, that speaks to your character and the integrity and the ability to, you know, and helps to plead your cause in the sense of I am different and I want to work through this. That sounds different than, you know, just saying I'm different or like, you know, being defensive or whatever. And a lot of that just, it's going to take time. If you're saying you're different, we're not going to believe you till we see it kind of thing.
Sure.
And like I said, in some cases you can see there's no current evidence. And that's part of this whole struggle too, is it's like, it kind of puts a lot of doubt in a lot of places, good and bad, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, well, you say you didn't do anything, and I don't really see anything, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's not happening behind closed doors, because that's the nature of these whole movements, is like, let's get this thing out of the dark. And but again, I very much feel like it's a pendulum to where we're like, all right, I got to stop believing every accusation, because they're not all true, you know, or there's nuances to the story that don't come out when the first flames start flaring up.
And I was thinking about it as far as, you know, the whole aspect of guilty till proven innocent type thing. That's you know, that's an unfortunate consequence at times, you know, because we can have people who, you know, might have been, like you were saying, the innocent, who are, you know, a victim of circumstance, but at the same time, you know, there is the aspect where, you know, okay, we do have this awareness that we're growing in, but it doesn't have to be, it's not necessarily, well, a witch hunt is kind of what comes to mind, you know, in that process. And I think at times that's what a, you know, cancel culture can become, is this process of the witch hunt type thing. And I think what you describe in a healthy sense is a humility, you know, to be able to recognize that, yes, I made a mistake at that point. I see it as a mistake, you know, nothing I can do about it. It is a real skeleton, but I've also put these things in my life to be able to, you know, keep that from happening again. And I think, you know, it's helpful when, as you describe, when you recognize, okay, we all have those skeletons, because I think, you know, that's kind of what Jesus did when, you know, he had the woman caught in the affair before him. You know, he just said, hey, yeah, this may or may not be, but there's some things about this that still seem pretty sketchy to me. You know, it's like, we have this woman, where's the man? You know, how come there isn't a man that's brought forward with this woman? Because, you know, that that kind of thing. And I like that dynamic of, you know, being able to say, okay, yeah, I have my issues as well. And am I fully aware of them in this moment? And if I am, how am I going to look at that person differently because of that awareness?
So...
Go right ahead. While the gears are spinning, pal, I see them.
That just gets to a bigger point, which is when we're hiding some things in our closet, a lot of times those are the things that we form our war parties around.
Right? Okay.
So if it comes out that this person was abusing someone and, you know, or has this sexual sin, that I've seen it a lot with sexual sin, where... until I fully come to an admission that, yeah, I am messed up and I have a sexual addiction of some sort. Up until that, we spend our whole life justifying and or protecting ourselves and or hiding and or like masking it.
Sure.
And one of the most common masks I've seen is like this indignancy towards the issue.
Sure.
Right. That we, and I've seen, again, this is coming from a church perspective and seeing this from church leadership.
Sure.
Where it's like, you'll go to hell if you, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And kind of this like level of indignancy towards the issue.
Sure.
So I do think there is an aspect like what you were just saying. Can I come to grips with my own struggles and say that person's like me, or am I nowhere near that ability to do that? And I only have the ability to, what's the word when you,
focus
in, indict.
Oh, okay.
You know, I only have the ability to say that person's guilty.
The judge.
And like point outwards. And I, as long as I'm pointing outwards and got my finger guns up, right? Like no one's looking at me. Right. And, and they clearly see I'm on the side of righteousness because I'm pointing the fingers. Does that make sense? So I think that,
And I quite often, I'll be honest, I'll see that in individuals who might have, like you're saying, that pet topic that you can't do that thing.
Yeah.
If you do that thing, you are not a Christian.
Yep.
You know, and I think at times that can be, you know, part of what you describe in that process. It's like, I'm going to focus on that thing because that helps me minimize the things that I have going on inside of me instead of being able to say, okay, yep, this is what's going on with me and I'm going to work on that. And you're welcome to join me because if you share that struggle, you know, so be it.
Yeah. And that speaks to, I mean, ultimately we're about covering and hiding or justifying, you know, I think that, again, going back to the flesh thing, this part of it. And so sometimes it is about the very thing I struggle with. I pretend I am the most righteous about. Sometimes it's what you're describing makes me think of someone who's been abused, who now says that is the worst thing ever, right? So you're on the receiving end of that. And like you said, rather than address the issues that I can't forgive, which That's a hairy issue, and I don't say that lightly, but rather than address my own struggles, I can only point outward at that thing, and that forever will be my center of focus.
Sure.
Right? And yeah, both of them cause us to not have the ability to, I don't know, have grace, sure. I guess, right?
Sure.
Whether it's I'm struggling with that thing and I don't admit it, or that's the thing that hurt me, I don't have the ability to look at it with a proper grace perspective, a God perspective. And honestly, none of us do until he gives us that ability. That's why he sent the Holy Spirit, you know, so that we can think about things above our own ability because we're being transformed by the renewing of our mind. You know what I mean? Because our natural bent is towards flesh and protecting myself and, you know, defending and justifying and
So I think we made it all the way around to a certain degree. It's certainly, I appreciate the way, you know, you've brought it around to wrap up in that sense of being aware of the mistakes we make in the process, because I believe we've all done things that might be worthy of canceling, but you know, being able to recognize that, how am I excluding others? How am I, you know, because I think we can look at a cultural dynamic and say, oh, that's the source. That, you know, that sports team, that, you know, educational system, whatever we want to. But, you know, when we bring it back to the fact that,